Few nice deep breaths. Maybe allow your eyes to close or just softly focus downward. Just allow yourself to arrive, your body to arrive. Coming into awareness of the experience of breathing in and breathing out. A lot of stuff happening in our lives. A lot of stuff happening in our world. Maybe just allowing your awareness and your attention to drop in and just notice the quality of your thoughts in this moment. Are there a lot of them? None of them? A few? There's nothing to fix. There's nothing to change. Just to be present. And in allowing ourselves to be still and to be quiet, maybe to ask, how is love calling me today? How is love calling me today? Can you meet whatever the response to that inquiry is with compassion and curiosity? This is a poem, one of my favorites, called Clearing by Martha Postlethwaite. I think it's fitting for an Easter Sunday. It says, do not try to save the whole world or do anything grandiose. Instead, create a clearing in the dense forest of your life and wait there patiently until the song that is your life falls into your own cupped hands and you recognize it and greet it. Only then will you know how to give yourself to this world so worthy of rescue. And then just coming back to your breath, breathing in and breathing out, letting yourself be supported by gravity, by the chair, allowing your awareness to then come back to the sights, to the sounds, even the smells and the awareness of the room here, and then gently opening your eyes. Thank you. Kind of a stunning thought, isn't it? To be the radiant light of God, shining the light of love. It sounds so beautiful and sounds so wonderful, and it's like, yeah. And is it that easy? No. I got to be honest with you. This is the first Easter message I've spoken in about 9 years. So, yeah. Thank you. Yeah. That's totally fine, Sina. Thank you. Thank you. Yes. Some of us are a little amped up on coffee, myself included. We had a wonderful fire circle at sunrise this morning. I want to really thank Brian and Maribel for pulling that off. It was just a wonderful, wonderful day to, a wonderful way to welcome in the day, and it was spectacular. And while I'm thinking about it, I don't know if Amber is here today. Amber? Matt? Did you guys walk in? They didn't make it, okay, but you heard on the announcements, the sound bath, the weekly sound bath that she's offering now, Thursday nights at 6. I came this last Thursday, and it's wonderful. I mean, just to be able to allow the vibration of sound to just bring relaxation and healing and all of that to come. I just want to encourage some of you, if you've never experienced that, to give that a try. So, but back to today. Yeah, Easter. Wow. It's just amazing that it's Easter Sunday. And I was just trying to think, you know, what to share and what to be able to offer, mindful of just the diversity of spiritual experience and opinion that even a room this size brings. There are many people here that for whom Easter, the belief in the literal physical bodily resurrection of Jesus and his literal physical bodily coming, returning again, is a source of great comfort and great hope. And I want to honor that and recognize that and validate that. There are many other people for whom, what? Huh? Jesus? You know, I don't know. I don't get it. Maybe you've never heard about it before. You know, so how do you try to, you know, say something that ministers to all of that and yet affirms the variety of spiritual experience that's here? Well, what I want to do is just spend a few moments this morning talking about the mystery of Easter, the invitation of Easter, the work, the test, and the result. So just five brief reflections, and then just spoiler alert, I'm really excited because at the end of the message today, I've reserved some time for a couple of people in our congregation to be able to share their stories of awakening to love, how the Easter story of awakening to love meets to them, and I'm just so grateful for that because it really is about real life where this stuff comes alive, and so I'm grateful for that. And then we're going to have time at the end of the service to celebrate birthdays. And then if you don't have any other plans, we're having a potluck after the service today. So we've got a lot of fun things planned. But on to today, awakening to love. First of all, I want to just talk about the mystery of the Easter story, okay? And that is simply this. We cannot fact check or data drive our way into the Easter story. Would you agree with me that we live in we always have, but I think today especially, you know, we are all about fact checking and making data driven decisions. How many of you would say that that's true of your life? Okay, yeah. And there's a place for that. We need that to live and to operate in this world. But when it comes to the Easter story, I've wondered what would happen if we could not deny questions about facts or data, but look beyond them and through them, and to consider the Easter story poetically, or to consider the Easter story mythically. Some of you are looking at me awfully spiritual. What did he just say? Myth? Easter? A myth? Let me just offer to you, to say that something is a myth is not to say that it's not true. Think of some of the myths that many of us grew up with. No, the two that come to my mind are Lord of the Rings, Chronicles of Narnia, Star Wars. Okay? Now, can we say that those stories contain truths about the human condition and the human experience that are true for all time? The facts may or may not be true. A long time ago in a galaxy far, far away, something may or may not have happened. I don't know, you know, the Lord of the Rings, you know, the story of Middle Earth and the things that happened in Middle Earth. Yeah, you know, maybe not, okay? This story about a man named Jesus of Nazareth coming, dying, and then being raised from the dead. Again, I'm not trying to say that it didn't happen, but I've sat through so many messages where I've heard preachers pound the pulpit and demand, you know, scientifically, empirically, that Jesus had to die from the dead. When I went to seminary, you know, there were so many different theories. Did Jesus really die? Did he just go into a swoon state? Did he go into a trance state? Did he wake up from the grave? And I just found myself bored by it. It's like, what's the point? Because here's why. Even the people of Jesus' day didn't get his message. They didn't get it. Palm Sunday, which we celebrated last week, it's kind of cringy. There's a cringy quality. Why is that? Because the very people who welcomed Jesus into town on a donkey saying, hail him, hail him, hail him, 24 hours later were shouting, nail him, nail him, nail him. And these were people who allegedly walked and heard Jesus teach physically. In fact, he told them it would happen, and they still didn't get it. If those people didn't get it, who am I to think I'm going to always get it? And maybe who's going to think you're always going to get it? And the flip side of this, if you don't get it, good. It's okay. Maybe the story isn't meant to be got. Maybe it's meant to be received. To receive it as a mystery. Now, you know, one fact I think that we can agree on is that the man, Jesus of Nazareth, is not here today. Can we agree on that? If someone walked in claiming to be Jesus of Nazareth, you know, I'd say, I'll have what you're having. That's probably pretty good. All right? Nevertheless, what can this story mean for you and mean for me? I hope these reflections today might help awaken that in you. Okay? The invitation is this. I love this quote by Howard Thurman. Don't ask what the world needs. Ask what makes you come alive and go do it. Because what the world needs is more people who have come alive. The story and the message of Easter is all about the awakening, the reawakening, the resurrection is the term that is used, to love, not just in one man's life, but in every single human life. How is love awakening in your life? What is it that brings you alive? So many people are busy running around trying to save the world. I've been guilty of it. And I'll tell you, life is orchestrating itself for me in ways that sometimes appear nonsensical, and yet they are always for the purpose of waking me up to my deepest passion, my deepest desire. And that same thing I want to offer is true for you today. What is it that makes you come alive? And then go do it. And here's the really cool thing. It may change. What lit you up a year ago may not be what lights you up today. What lit you up 10 years ago? it's a daily, ongoing thing. But the beauty of Easter is not so much about the resurrection of a man, but it's the resurrection of his life in your heart. And whether you physically see him or touch him in person, can you see or know that love in your heart and in your soul? Because that, my friends, is what makes you alive. There's work, though. And here's the work. Accepting that we're already accepted. The good news that Jesus lived and taught was announcing. In the Bible, it's the word evangelist. Evangelist is one who announces, who proclaims good news. And the good news that he lived and taught was that all of humanity is already loved, already chosen, already accepted. And the people who weren't supposed to get it, got it. And those who were supposed to get it, struggled with it. Why? Why? I've been thinking a lot about, as people, agency. agency. We've talked a lot about human power, okay? You know, reclaiming your power. If you've been around in a lot of the self-help world, reclaim your power, reclaim your power, reclaim your power, reclaim your power. And all that does for me is just set up an epic power struggle. I think what's emerging, and a different way to think about power, is agency. And agency is yours and my ability to choose. And this is where, in the area of love, it gets really interesting. Because to love is to choose. And when we show love toward someone or something, inherent in that love is preserving their ability to choose and to receive it. But in the spiritual economy, in God's economy, the invitation is to choose a love that's already chosen you. What did Jesus say to his disciples? You did not choose me, but I chose you. Sounds really good, right? But how many of you like to have things forced upon you against your will? I don't.
No, I like it. No, I don't like it.
You don't? Yeah, I don't like it. Yeah. Yeah. No, there's always a difference when you choose to do something out of your own will versus somebody telling you what to do, right? Yeah, okay. But I really think this is the difference in transitioning in our growth and awakening to sacred love in our lives, of the difference between the power of love and the love of power. You see, when we love power, it's this idea of we have to feel in control of our life. I like to feel in my control of my life. I don't like to feel out of control. But when I open myself to the greater mystery, the greater love that controls, carries, and sustains me, wow, what a ride, okay? So easy, though, but there's a test. There's a test. Do any of you recognize that line? Julie recognizes it, right? What's it from? Yeah, so true confession. I mean, were you here last week for Jesus Christ Superstar? Okay, yeah. Awesome job, Julie and the whole team there. I have to confess to you, I had heard of Jesus Christ Superstar. I had never listened to it or watched it until last weekend. I came for the dress rehearsal on Saturday. It was like, wow, this musical is great. I went home that night and watched it. I can't believe I'm telling you all this, okay? But this is, yeah, the story of your minister, all right? And there was one line in the last song that just stopped me dead in my tracks. It's the line that says, do you think you're who you say they are? Jesus, do you think you are who they say you are? Think about that. What I think is the brilliant artistry of that musical, and the reason it was so not well received in the Christian community, this is just my opinion, okay? So don't take it, okay? But it's humanity that set Jesus up to be this superstar that he never set himself up to be. How many times when Jesus appeared before Pilate, the political power of the day, did he say, are you the king of the Jews? What did Jesus say? It is as you say. When Jesus appeared before Caiaphas, the spiritual leader of the day, and they said, are you the king of the Jews? What did he say? It is as you say. You see, Jesus never set himself up that way. We, the people, did that. Okay? And we don't do it just with Jesus. I think we do it with people in general. Going back to who you say you are, as you go through your life, the journey back home, the journey to love, is remembering who you truly are. And along the way, we pick up messages from our parents, from our partners or spouses, maybe our teachers, coaches, maybe even ministers, that put labels on us. And love invites us to question those labels. Are they real and are they true? Now, of course, initially we'd say, yeah, 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 no, of course they aren't true. But what about the labels we put on ourselves? The masks we wear, the walls we put around our heart, the personas that we put up in front to think that this is what we need to do to survive in the world. We all learned them, right? I sure did. This is how to behave in the world. This is how to get along. This is how to keep the peace. Love in its invitation to us to awaken, has this uncanny way of stripping those things away. How many of you here believe in Satan or heard of Satan? Do you know what the word Satan means? The literal meaning of it? In the Bible, at least? You know what it means? Not separation, not a fallen angel. Those are things of God. Accuser. The word Satan means accuser. So I heard it put this way. If you were Satan, how would you take you out? Say that again. If you were Satan, how would you take you out? See, we grew up thinking Satan is this little, you know, red man with pitchfork and a demon and all this kind of stuff, whispering bad things in our mind. You know, that's great for cartoons and flannel board Sunday school thing. But if we think about the temptation of Christ, Christ was tempted in the desert, okay? It was that internal voice that accused, okay? And only you know. And here's the point. Regardless of what you believe about Satan or whatever, you know, as you think about this voice of the accuser, can you meet that voice of the accuser with love? With compassion? You see, I just love the expression, you know. I love what they say in AA, okay? Religion is for people who are afraid of going to hell. Spirituality are for those who've already been there. Yes. Okay? The idea, I heard Stephen Levine put it this way, if you open your heart in hell, you're no longer there. To meet accusation with more accusation or more force, no. Can you meet that with love? Miracles happen when you do. All right. The risk in coming home to love is remembering who you already are. I already talked about that. All right, so here's the result. In just a minute, you're going to hear a song that has come to mean a lot to me. It's all about awakening to Easter love and the resurrection of Jesus. It's about having new eyes, new ears, a new mind, a new heart, to look at things that may appear ordinary and start to see them extraordinary. And to help us do that, I've asked a couple of folks from our congregation to share their love stories with you. And so Donna and Lloyd, would you two come up and share your story with us?
Good morning.
Good morning.
And yes, we, our outfits are courtesy of my adopted parents in Oregon, who have passed away from Alzheimer's. And Papa had this lovely coat. He was in the Elks Lodge, and Lloyd has his white shoes on too. So, and he's tall and thin, and they're. My girlfriend, who's like my sister, she said, if there's anything you want of hers, and I said, like, I could put anything on that woman wore, but this particular blouse fit, so I'm sure they're smiling down at us today. So our story is, in July of 2019, we were going to Church of Truth. I was going to Church of Truth, mm-hmm. And Lloyd came in, and I recognized him as being new. And I filled out a name tag for him. And as I filled it out and he was spelling out his name, I said, I'm not very good at remembering names. But he said, just remember.
Lloyds of London.
And many
jolly
of you.
Good. Jolly good.
Many of you have heard that, I'm sure. So 2 weeks later, he came back and our paths crossed. Again, and we were so crowded that we literally couldn't move. I did remember his name, and he said, well, I'm looking for a place to sit. And I said, well, if you're brave, there is a seat over on the side, and that's over where I'm sitting. And I said, you're welcome to sit there. And he asked me,
can you behave yourself?
a man with a sense of humor. And personally, I think love language should be one of the, or humor should be one of the love languages, because that's my love language, humor. So I said, my answer to his question was, well, I've been known not to, but I will try for this morning. And he said,
point me in the direction.
So we sat together, and we had the opportunity twice during that service to hold hands that morning. Yes. So within the next 4 weeks, he only came to church twice, but finally on the fourth week, he did ask me out. And we were going to do a barbecue at his house and then a concert in the park. And so as he's describing where he lives, what the address is, what the color of the house is, where's the cross streets, finally he said, oh, heck, I'll just tie a yellow ribbon around the old oak tree. So when I pulled up in front of the house, the huge maple tree in front of the house had caution tape wrapped round and round.
I needed the caution.
So he had me at the caution tape. Within 48 hours, we sat down and had a discussion, and it was that neither one of us was expecting anything permanent in our lives, but we knew that Spirit was pushing us together. And so in September of 21, we got married, and shortly thereafter, Lloyd was diagnosed with Alzheimer's. Needless to say, for anyone who has dealt with family members, it's not easy. You do the best that you can for as long as you can, and then you need help. And for me, I got to a point where I did need help. And so I had been approached and told about someone who might work out for us. We did not have a meet and greet. Things just didn't happen the way I was expecting them to. And on a Tuesday morning, I'm in the back part of the house and I hear Lloyd talking to someone out front. And I go out front and here's this young man sitting on my couch. And I say, hello? And you are who? Lloyd had let him in the house, and do you remember why?
Loving kindness.
He said he saw nothing but loving kindness. And he let him in, and he has been a huge part of our life ever since. And with that, I would like to introduce you to Dane Hammond.
Thank you, guys. I love you so much. Thank you for bringing me to Unity. I've learned so much since I've been here and introducing me to James, and it's been a blessing getting to know some of you, and I'm just looking forward to continue to learn and grow with all of you. So James asked me to share my testimony and what Easter means to me, so I wrote a little speech. It should just take a minute, so... Today marks the anniversary of Christ's resurrection. When he rose from the grave, he moved from death of his past self into the glory of his eternal self. Reverend James asked me to speak about the resurrection that has occurred in my life from an experience of shame and doubt into heavenly gates of eternal love. I grew up attending Christian churches somewhat regularly, and there was always a recurring theme in the sermons that I so intently listened to: self-degradation, asceticism, self-denial, and the one that affected me the most, homophobia. Being a gay child in the Christian church taught me to remain hyper-vigilant over my thoughts, actions, and behaviors. I learned a conditional type of love that if I only deny myself, will God offer me affection and blessings. The attitude of the church was reflected by society at large, which I learned as I navigated my way through adolescence. The world would only love me if I hid my femininity and the other things that made me different from other boys. Because of this, I became a supremely self-conscious person, constantly hiding my true self from not only the world, but from me. Confusion was a common theme within my interiority as I continued to grow. Did God love me? Was there something terribly wrong with me that I could fix if only I denied myself more and more? In my young adult years, I had completely given up on the notion of Christianity and devolved into more or less a deviant. I partook in heavy drugs and mindless sex. Anything that would erase the pain of my inner turmoil was my salvation. This continued for years, fueled by self-hatred and despondency, until one day I realized that my methods of living were only adding to the pain I felt so severely. I cleaned up my act by attending AA meetings regularly. In AA, we are taught to depend on a loving and protective God, so again my search for a higher power began, and I was confronted with the Christian God of my past. This time, I would do it right. I would be a true Christian. The years of drugs and self-abuse had created a person desperate to atone for his sins. Something amazing did happen, however. After turning my life over to God, I discovered a light within myself that flooded me with pleasure and peace. This was a light I had to choose, and for a long time, I refused to choose it because I had never associated God with unconditional affection. So for now, I buried the light beneath me. I turned my life over to Christ and promised that I would do anything to make up for my past. While reading the Bible, instead of being filled with hope and promise, I became so convinced that there was in fact something terribly wrong with me, that I was born of sin and that my character was inherently evil. I learned that I couldn't trust my own heart or mind and that the only way to salvation was through punishment. I developed a dysfunctional behavior of punishing myself whenever I thought I had committed a sin. Everything I did was sinful to me, the way I communicated, the way I looked, the way I acted in the world. I started committing horrific acts of punishment upon myself because I thought it was the only way God would forgive me for these slights against him. After night upon night of rumination and deeply painful stress, I ended up having a psychotic break. I spent years in the mental health system trying to recover from the wounds I inflicted upon my mind, body, and spirit. Within those empty, sterile halls, I became a shell of myself. My beliefs had caused me to be institutionalized, separated from society, essentially a crippled human being. For years I lived this way, moving as a shadow in that haunted house, my soul starved of any light. But somehow, some very spiritual people found me within those halls and placed their hands upon me. Suddenly, I remembered the light that had been bestowed upon me when I first truly turned my life over to God. I was rocketed into a new dimension of love, like my soul had been cracked open and its true nature was spilling out. I decided I was going to live in this space of unconditional love. After a short while, my condition improved. I was released from the hospital and became a member of society again. After being graced with such tenderness, I began to realize that there was nothing I had to do to please God, that he was always inside of me, and that I was already the person I was supposed to be. I just had to remember who that person was. Life has become a beautiful place ever since I left the hospital. I have my struggles like everyone else does, and sometimes I question the light that's been given to my soul. But whenever I'm going through hard times, I just remember that there is absolutely nothing that can separate me or anyone else from the love and affection of God. Now, instead of seeing the resurrection of Christ as something only the most disciplined people receive, I see it as a symbol of my life, transmuting pain, suffering, and shame into unconditional love for myself and the world around me. We are all Christ if we only choose to remember who we are, children of God, raised from the dead, and promised eternal glory here on earth and thereafter. So that's my testimony of my conversion to love. So, and I wrote just a really short, oh, thank you. And I just wrote a really short poem about what I think is the character of God called A New Dimension. The quiet folds of life praise his name. The breathless in-betweens withhold the riches of the multitude. Has there ever been a place that doesn't reflect his face or a sound that doesn't sing his praise? You find him even in the shadows, in the indelible make of the deep. Around every edge he awaits, under every doubt a stillness. The moment before choosing death and awakening into light. The emptiness pours upon him. The satisfied aches for his void. Liberty is bestowed upon us to act as his offspring, and unfold our love upon the walks of the earth the same way we are beheld to him. That's all.
You.
James just reminded me, there was a poem that I had also. After we got married and Lloyd was diagnosed, I ran across this poem, and it hangs on our wall. And it says, meeting was fate. Becoming your friend was my choice. Falling in love with you was beyond my control. If I did one thing right in my life, it's when I gave my heart to you. I wish I could turn back the clock. I could have found you sooner so I could love you longer. But I love you forever and always.
What do you say after that?
Hallelujah. Hallelujah. Put your hands in the air and let it out.
This is a song about perspective. Everything can change as soon as you start looking at things differently. When I was a boy, each week on Sunday we would go to church and pay attention to the priest, and he would read the holy word and consecrate the holy bread, and everyone would kneel and bow. Today the only difference is everything is holy now. Everything is holy now. When I was in Sunday school, we would learn about the time Moses split the sea in two and Jesus made the water wine. And I remember feeling sad that miracles don't happen still. But now I can't keep track, because everything is a miracle. Everything's a miracle. Wine from water is not so small, but the better magic trick is that there's anything at all. So the challenging thing becomes not to look for miracles, but trying to see where there isn't one. When holy water was rare at best, I barely wet my fingertips. But now I have to hold my breath. It's like I'm swimming in a sea of it. Used to be the world half there, heaven second rate hand me down. But I'm walking with a reverent air, 'cause everything is holy now. Everything is holy now. Read a questioning child's face. Say it's not a testament. That would be very hard to say. See another new morning come and say it's not a sacrament. I can tell you it can't be done. This morning when I walked outside, I saw a little red-winged bird shining like a burning bush and singing like a scripture verse. It made me want to bow my head. I remember when church let out, how things have changed since then, because everything is holy now. Used to be a world half there, heaven second rate hand me down. Now I'm walking with reverent air, because everything is holy now. Everything, everything, everything is holy now. Everything, everything, everything.
Just taking a deep breath in and maybe allowing everything to settle. And God, as we are here today, we thank you for the holiness of love and goodness that is all around us. May our eyes be open, may our ears hear, may our hearts feel the holiness, love, and goodness that is all around us, for the sake of living love and uplifting lives. Amen. So it is. All right. We want to continue by receiving our offering this morning. So I just want to give you a few minutes to prepare for that. And if you're online, you can go to our website, and there's many ways that you can give. Somebody was talking about the caution tape or so, whatever was going on like that. Yeah, some of you may have noticed that our playset out there has a bunch of caution tape around it. Somebody this week, we don't know who, but really enjoyed playing on the playset out there and overused it. And so it's okay. We're investigating getting it fixed and getting it repaired. But just if you see all the red tape out there, that's what all that is about. So, but we're on it, and it's good that it can be used like that. So there we go. All right, as we get ready to receive our offering, let's say our action statement here. Divine love through me blesses and multiplies all that I am, all that I have, and all that I receive. Thank you for your generosity this morning.